Welcome to our first setting of the new year. Before we begin, I want to recognize the presence on the bench of our newest judge, Judge Liam Hardy. The Senate gave its advice and consent to Liam's nomination in December. He was thereafter administered the oaths by Justice Thomas, for whom he clerked. Those of you with long memories will also remember that he clerked for Judge Ryan of this court early in her tenure on the court. So, Liam, we welcome you.
Thank you.
First case is United States versus Mader. The appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Appellant
may argue.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Major Mary Claire Finnan, and I represent the appellant in this case, Sergeant Thomas Mader. Chief Judge Stuckey, I respectfully request to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. The concept of consent is older than criminal law itself. Before there was a distinction between criminal and tort law, there was volente non injuria, or to the willing, there is no harm. In 1950, the UCMJ was enacted, bringing the common law history into a simple, clear statute for charging assaults. Simple and aggravated assault. And this court has honored that distinction ever since. Despite this clear dividing line, trial counsel blundered. Sergeant Mader had a mistake of fact defense, but the trial counsel chose not to use the tools that the President and Congress had given him to remove consent as an issue. Equally startling, the appellate court tried to fix the government's charging mistakes on appellate review to rescue the charges with bad law. And simply put, this opinion undoes a lot of the settled law about the dividing line between aggravated and simple assault. And it provides no standard for a court to use going forward.
Is the point that the CCA made bad law or that it made law?
It made bad law, Your Honor.
It made bad law.
Yes.
If it had made good law, it would have been okay.
It's
making law here.
It says
that as a matter of law, there can't be consent.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's against what Congress has given us because they wrote the statute upon the back of common law. So this was removed from what the common law has respected as a defense. And that sharp dividing line between ordinary and aggravated assault has always been about the potential for harm or the likelihood of serious bodily injury. These burns only lasted 3 to 5 seconds or between 2 to 5 seconds. One Marine described, the only Marine to describe any pain from the burn, said it was a slight burning sensation. And a second Marine told the Sergeant Mader the next morning that he wouldn't worry about the burn. These burns are minor injuries at most. There's no evidence.
Those are all questions of fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did it hurt? How much? Did you have a scar from it? And we don't really get into that kind of thing. Isn't the real question what the CCA did here is a matter of law? They said, well, we don't care what happened as a matter of fact because you can't consent to this.
Yes, Your Honor. And they relied primarily on ARIB, the ACCA's Army Court of Criminal
Army
Appeals.
Army case. Well, of course, that's fine for the Army, but it's certainly not binding up here.
Yes, Your Honor. And the appellant in this case certainly does not have to have ARIB overturned to win. We believe ARIB is also bad law because this is another case that does not respect.
Well, of course, ARIB's not before us.
No. Go
ahead.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Certainly, this court decision could still use ARIB or abide by ARIB because this appellant doesn't, his misconduct comes nowhere close to what the the injuries that the appellant in Arab had. At least Arab had a standard. It took a pre-existing standard and applied it outside the scope of parental discipline. That standard was the risk of substantial bodily injury or extreme pain or disfigurement. But even using that standard, the court there said it was a close call on the cigarette burns in that case, even though there were burns on the victim's nipples, even though there was a row of burns across her abdomen and up her chest, even though the burns in that case were in the middle of a brutal assault that included zip ties, being dragged from room to room, and him carving her initials in her buttocks with a knife. Ultimately, it was beyond the scope of anything that she had previously consented to, and that was important to the ACCA's opinion in that case. It just seemed that the court could not believe that there was actual consent there. But the lower court's opinion here reveals the problem with Arab. It leaves courts, once courts are unmoored from the dividing line that Congress has provided between aggravated and simple assault, it's always asking for the military judge to provide a value judgment or a moral judgment on the law. They must keep imposing modified standards to fit the facts of their cases, and that's not what the law requires. There is an irony in this case in relying on Arab to say that cigarette burns are objectively offensive when the victim in Arab said she was okay with light cigarette burns. But to be clear...
Major, you keep on talking about Arab, but as the chief judge said, what do we care about Arab? Arab is from the lower court, didn't come up here. We're not talking about Arab. And I recognize that, in fact, the government speaks a lot about Arab, but why does this court, hearing this case, care anything about Arab?
I guess it should not care about Arab, Your Honor. This case, that's a comparison case of saying at least there they got a little closer to the standard of aggravated assault and they came out and said that. In this case, we're not even anywhere close where Congress set the dividing line at the time this conduct was punished and at the time the court-martial came. That standard has been expanded by Congress in the Military Justice Act of 2016. They've expanded the statute of aggravated assault by saying that consent, I'm sorry, by expanding substantial bodily harm to include a greater degree of, a lesser degree of injury. But of course this case predates that, and it still would not come close to that degree of injury.
Counsel, could I turn your attention to the remedy you're seeking here?
Yes, we are respectfully requesting that this court set aside the finding of guilty to the assault conviction.
Correct. And my question is, why? Why would we not instead remand this case to the CCA for to apply the appropriate legal standard if, in fact, we were to hold that they got it wrong the first time?
I think this the opinion in this case, Your Honor, sort of did a three-step process. Obviously, the first step, did Sergeant Mader honestly and reasonably, well, did he honestly believe there was a mistake of fact as to consent? They found that in the affirmative. But then they also found that the Marines did apparently consent. And that leads us to believe that it would have been reasonable, a reasonable person under the standard understanding of you know, what factors you're looking at when you look to see if there's a mistake of fact as to consent. Under that standard, there was apparent consent from the Marines. And that's, a phrase from the lower court here, that there was apparent consent, but despite that apparent consent. And then they sort of go on to step three, which is imposing this layer of bad law on it, to say that Marines could never consent to this type of misconduct. It's a question of law, as you said, Your Honor, about this. So,
well, if your interpretation of the CCA's opinion is correct, that essentially they found both the subjective and the objective when it comes to consent, what harm would there be to appellant for this court to remand it back for the CCA to address this within the context of the correct legal standard, if in fact we were to decide that they had the incorrect legal standard before? How would that harm appellant if we were to remand it rather than for us at this level to reach down all the way and say, no, we're going to set aside the assault convictions?
Because the it would be asking the lower court to come to, you know, essentially a different conclusion than they already found that, you know, they already found that the Marines apparently consented. So at this point.
But that's my point. How is that harming appellant? How is appellant prejudiced if you're saying the lower court already found what you want them to find? If we're simply saying send it back to the CDC, we're going to remand it to the CCA for them to apply the appropriate legal standard. How is that prejudicing appellant?
It would not prejudice the appellant, okay, assuming they were bound to the same, to find the same.
Well, they would be bound by our laws, I assure you that. So.
Yes, Your Honor. This case has always held, just to move on to some of the points that the appellee brought up in this case, the meaning of lawful consent has always been about non-fraudulent consent, about knowing consent. It hasn't swooped out to encompass, you know, everything that ever could be illegal under the code or something else. And that's what this opinion did. It swept up, it would sweep up a huge a swath of normal human interaction, because really the assault and battery charge is, you know, the only boundary it has is consent. And by lowering the standard for or really imposing a non-lawful consent here.
Counsel, let me ask you this. On the issue of this consent, he has to honestly and reasonably believe that they are consenting, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, it's not a trick question. It's just that I sometimes get confused on this part of the law. But the question is, why, when you're looking at the reasonableness prong, do you take into account what a reasonable, was he a sergeant in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would do in this case, or what a purely reasonable, objective, you know, the fictional reasonable person would do?
I think you look at the fictional reasonable person, Your Honor.
You don't take into consideration that this is the military and you have a superior asking, or at least assuming and making people do things that are to members that are junior to him?
Well, I think that
would a sergeant reasonably believe that he can order or tell a subordinate like a private to come here and let me do you harm?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's, you know, when we're looking at consent, we're looking at actual consent, the interaction between the two parties.
We don't have to consider at all the military context of it?
If this had been charged as hazing, that is exactly what that
Your distinction is that it's only
if this had been charged as a what?
As a hazing orders violation, Your Honor.
Yeah. So your distinction is that, and I'm not criticizing for it, I just want to understand. So your distinction is you don't take into context the military aspect of it when you're looking at the common law formulation of assault and battery, but you do if it is charged as a military orders violation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, let's clarify that a little bit. Aren't you muddling the legal standard and the factual issue? Isn't that what Judge Sparks is raising? Isn't that part of the factual calculation that would take place by the panel members?
That is what should be a factual calculation, Your Honor, but I think this opinion made it a legal calculation. The government asked the military judge not to provide the mistake of fact defense instruction for that reason, because of the because of their difference in rank, and the NMCCA, at least in part, held that up. It's sort of a two-part opinion. They said it wasn't just based on hazing, but it was also hazing, you know, referencing hazing. It was
did the CCA rule, and I can't remember, did they actually rule that the instruction given was erroneous?
No, Your Honor. They didn't. The military judge gave a...
He gave the traditional bench book instruction, right?
He did, Your Honor. They did.
Which gives the standard that you and I just talked about, right?
Yes, Your Honor. All circumstances are considered.
All right.
Is what the standard instruction
is. Yeah, that's what I thought. But thank you for clearing that up for me.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, in the CCA's opinion, they didn't really address the reasonableness prong, did they?
They did say that the Marines apparently consented.
Right, but that's the actual consent. At least in my reading, the CCA's opinion, they said that consent was unavailable. Since consent was not a lawful defense here, there was no real need to address the reasonableness prong because they just said it was, hence it was unreasonable because it was not available.
Yes, Your
Honor. Consent was unreasonable.
Yes.
So at the very least, we don't really have an analysis of the reasonable prong, do we?
Not a thorough analysis, no, Your Honor. It's just the finding that it would have been unreasonable, I think. Is only unreasonable because of it's not lawful here. This opinion, the problem with providing no standard here, obviously, I talked about earlier, it leaves the military judge at sea when to impose sort of a moral analysis on the charges. And for a trial defense counsel, it's very difficult to predict for your client when consent would be available as a defense. And finally, it enlarges the prosecutor's power by being able to pick and choose. It sort of makes assault a super statute where you can reference any other charge in the UCMJ or something illegal outside the UCMJ. So for all those reasons, the appellant respectfully requests that this court set aside those findings.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Jennifer Joseph, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Nick Gannon, I represent the United States. This court should affirm for two reasons.
First, could you speak up a little, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
This court should affirm for two reasons. First, the lower court correctly held that junior Marines could not lawfully consent to injuries that left permanent scars and were against government interest. Second, the lower court's holding leaves the defense of mistake of fact as to consent intact, so long as that consent is legally cognizable. If this court believes the lower court applied incorrect law in its factual sufficiency review, the appropriate remedy is to remand. To the first point, consent is sometimes, but not always, a defense to a battery. Bygrave held that in order for consent to be relevant to the unlawful force element of assault, that consent has to be legally cognizable.
But Bygraves a simple assault case?
Bygrave was an aggravated assault case.
Correct.
Your Honor.
It was not a simple assault case.
That is accurate, Your Honor. But OVA was looking at the defense of consent in the assault consummated by a battery case. And OVA held that whether or not consent is a defense to assault consummated by a battery depends on the validity of the consent. Now, OVA was considering that question in terms of inducement, but to refer back to Bygrave, we know that the validity of consent isn't just about inducement because there was fully informed consent in Bygrave. So Bygrave recognized that consent may be irrelevant in certain circumstances where there is a government interest in preventing that particular type of harm. So because consent may, but not always, negate the offensiveness of a touching, it is important to consider that type of touching. So in terms of the scale of normal human interaction, while the back rub in Johnson, while consent could negate the offensiveness of that touching, cigarette burns are not back rubs. And this court should affirm that junior Marines cannot lawfully consent to them.
Why not? Public policy?
Not because of public policy, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that what the CCA said?
The United States position is that by grade...
Well, no, what did the CCA... The CCA made law here. The CCA, as a U case, proclaimed that you could not consent to this kind of treatment.
That is correct, Your
Honor. You know, they didn't leave it up to the members. They, you know, it's not a question of fact. They said that as a question of law, he couldn't raise this as a defense because they were incapable of consent. Now, why were they incapable of consent?
So, Your Honor, the lower court, focusing on the meaning of what lawful consent is, determined based on two factors, that the consent to this particular type of harm wasn't lawful due to, one, the harm at issue was designed to leave long-lasting, possibly permanent scars, and two, it was against government interest.
Well, yeah, that's public policy.
Well, the government interest here, Your Honor, there's precedent for recognizing that in Bygrave. And the particular government interest that's what I'm asking.
And a minute ago, you seemed to deny that that's what they based it on.
Your Honor, the United States position is that the lower court based its holding on the recognition of the government's interest in preventing this type of harm.
But what interest? It said that, but it didn't say what the interest was.
The United States position, Your Honor, is that the government interest harmed here is ensuring appropriate senior-subordinate relationships.
Now, wait a minute, though. Mm-hmm. When you just went through, you've mentioned junior Marines and so forth, but in your articulation of the standard that was set by the CCA and in your briefs before this court, you're making no distinction on the fact that they were, in fact, junior Marines. So the CCA didn't make that distinction, did they? They didn't say junior Marines could not consent. They said it is the nature of the act, the use of the burning of a cigarette on the flesh of another. So are you now saying that there is a distinction here that is based on the rank of the victims?
Your Honor, the United States position is that the senior subordinate relationship does factor into the government's interest.
Well, you keep talking about the United States' position, and I think both me and Judge Olson are talking about what the CCA did.
Yes, Your Honor. The lower court...
Is the United States' position over here and the CCA over here, or what?
Your Honor, we believe they are consistent. The lower court said that their analysis didn't turn on the rank disparity,
it didn't turn on the rank disparity. It didn't turn on senior subordinate relations, which would seem to be a reasonable factor. But I'm not on the CCA. They seem to have said that as a matter of underlying morality or permanent harm, you just can't consent to this. But I don't know. What did they say, and what is the government now saying?
The United States is asking this court to affirm that the consent wasn't legally valid due to the type of injury and the government interest, particularly the senior subordinate relationship.
And where is that in the CCA opinion? And where is that in your briefs before this court? that it is the senior-subordinate relationship. And if that's the focus, why wasn't this charged as a hazing rather than as a simple assault?
Your Honor, to answer the second question, there is prosecutorial discretion to charge it as the 128 versus the orders violation. And if you give me just one moment to pull the site of where they discuss the type of injury, Your Honor.
Well, you seem to articulate earlier the correct point that the CCA was making. When I say the correct point, the point you were correct in saying that they were focusing on the nature of the injury, that it was painful and that it could potentially leave a permanent scar. I just don't see anything in there that says anything about the senior-subordinate relationship.
Your Honor, the United States is looking at the language in the lower court that's focusing on society's interest in protecting victims from this type of harm.
Okay, but this kind of goes back to the point that Judge Hardy raised. And you state on page 17 of your brief, you say, quote, overlooks the United States' interest in deterring the infliction of even superficial cuts by service members against other service members. And the question that Judge Hardy had was, what is this interest? It went unarticulated by the CCA. So does the government have an ability to articulate for us what this interest is of the United States here?
The government interest, Your Honor, is generally speaking the well-being of its service members. And part of what goes into the well-being of its service members is ensuring appropriate interactions between senior and subordinate.
There you go back to senior and subordinate.
Yeah, but they didn't talk about that. They proclaimed as a matter of law that you couldn't consent. For reasons that still aren't clear.
Counsel, the government had the discretion. They could have brought a hazing charge if they had wanted to, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And they elected not to.
Yes, Your Honor.
But you want us to treat it as if it was a hazing charge by taking consent off the table, right?
Your Honor, the United States isn't asking the 128 to be treated as a hazing charge just because there could be hazing parallels. The United States is asking the court to focus on the meaning of what is lawful consent and affirm the lower court's holding that this was not lawful consent.
Well, because when it seems like when we read your briefs that you're saying, well, this is like hazing. It has elements of hazing. It has this disparate rank problem. Therefore, like hazing, where you have no consent, there should be no consent here. But that this gets back to the original problem. It was the government's choice not to charge hazing for whatever reason. But it seems like you're asking us to give the government the benefit of bringing a hazing charge without them actually having to bring it.
Your Honor, the United States' position is that there are differences between charging something as hazing versus the 128 here, and it's not in an effort to take the consent off the table. In that regard, it works similarly to how raising the requirement to raise some evidence before you rate the instruction works already. So if a military judge determines that the consent wasn't lawful, then the accused doesn't rate the instruction.
Counsel, could I turn your attention to page 25 of your brief? You say the lower court's holding did not remove consent as a defense, but rather found the consent was not legally cognizable under the circumstances. Therefore, the defense remains. Well, how is that so? If consent is not legally cognizable in the simple assault context, than if the defense requested an instruction on that point, the military judge would be able to say, no, you cannot receive an instruction on that. So how are you saying in your brief here that the defense remains?
Your Honor, to clarify the United States' point in the brief, it's that the defense of mistake of fact as to consent remains for batteries to which consent is legally cognizable.
And so the CCA, all the CCAs now, under your approach, would have the ability to determine what fits, what type of conduct fits into which basket. In the simple assault context, this CCA grabbed out of the sky this idea, burning with a cigarette butt, not legally cognizable. How would service members know in the future whether their simple assault act would be subject to the consent defense or not?
Your Honor, as long as the offense is charged as unlawful, there are no more notice issues than the unavailability of the consent defense to aggravated assault.
Well, it has to be charged as unlawful. Otherwise, there's nothing to charge.
Yes, Your Honor, but if it is charged as unlawful, and that means that it has to be...
Are you saying that if it's charged as unlawful, then automatically the defense isn't available, or why?
No, Your Honor, just
what
that...
What are you saying?
Just that... in terms of what defenses are available, it has to still be lawful consent. That's within the meaning of the statute.
Well, now I'm totally confused. I still don't know what the government is saying. The government seems to be saying, well, yes, the defense is available if it's lawfully cognizable, but it's not lawfully cognizable here. So therefore, it's not available, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but the United States position
is... Well, then where's that get us? I mean, that's not... If it's not lawfully cognizable here, then it's not this case, and why are we talking about some other case?
Yes, Your Honor. Just a quick point on that. It's similar to how mistake of fact as to consent would already work. You could put on some evidence of that, but as we know in a case like Hibbard, you may not rate that instruction even after you're charged.
You can put on some evidence of mistake of fact, but you can't get an instruction.
The military judge may determine as a matter of law that the evidence was insufficient to rate the instruction, Your Honor.
Well, yeah, sure. He always can do that.
Which would be similar to in circumstances where the consent isn't legally valid.
All right.
Lieutenant Joseph.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'm going to give you a hypothetical, and I kind of want to know how your or the government's theory would play out here. Now, what if you have two privates, two E1s? Having been an E1, I know that we do some things that are unwise at times.
Yes, sir.
And these two E1s are sitting at the bar, and they decide that, hey, look, let's be buddies for life. I'm going to burn you, and you burn me. Got it? Got it. Right? Right. And they each decide to burn themselves, only to find out that later on they're now charged with assault and battery against each other. How does your theory play out in that instance? I'm just curious. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. And I have nothing against E1s.
Understood, Your Honor. In that hypothetical, Your Honor, the second factor, the against government interest piece of finding the consent lawful or not, that weighs heavily there. It would be a consideration for the military judge to make whether or not in the off-base bar setting, the agreement to mutually burn each other is against government interest, which is different than only a senior Marine burning a junior Marine.
I would agree.
But wait a minute. Again, what about any type of notice to our service members about when consent would apply and when we're not? You're now saying, and I continue to be concerned with both the appellant's counsel and your muddling of the legal aspect, which I think the chief judge has hammered home, and this concept of factual determinations, factual considerations that would be made on the part of panel members, and in part a determination by the military judge about whether to give a certain instruction. But here you're saying, well, in response to Judge Sparks's question, well, it's a consideration. How is it a consideration in terms of the legal principle articulated by the CCA here? I don't see anything in there that says, in the CCA opinion, that starts drawing these lines. As the chief judge has said, they've come up with a strict legal rule that they seem to have grabbed out of thin air.
Yes, Your Honor. In my remaining time, I think the best response to that question would be to conclude briefly that if this court believes the lower court applied incorrect law in its factual sufficiency review, the appropriate remedy is to remand. As in Beattie, Holt, and Swift, there's any question as to the validity of a lower court's factual sufficiency review, the test isn't prejudice and it's simply remanded. In Leak, for example, this court had uncertainty about the lower court's application of law and its factual sufficiency review. There were two interpretations, one correct in law and one not. And rather than this court say which one was the correct one, they remanded because this court cannot find the facts itself. And contrary to appellant's claim, the lower court did not find that the appellant's belief was reasonable but for the invalid consent. So the appropriate remedy here would be to remand for the court to evaluate the reasonableness of appellant's mistaken belief for factual sufficiency. Pending any other further questions from the court, the United States respectfully asks this court to affirm.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The appellant have rebuttal.
Briefly, Your Honor. The lesson of Bygrave is that Article 128 was imposed on the common law. It incorporates the common law understandings and the common law distinctions. To quote Bygrave, Congress is entitled to carve out exceptions for this class of cases, talking about Article 128 and HIV as a grievous informed consent did not apply when the misconduct was a means likely to cause grievous bodily harm. Congress is entitled to carve out exceptions for this class of cases, but until it removes conduct from the ambit of Article 128, we are to follow this court's precedent. There is no, generally speaking, in criminal law, we get the public policy concerns are given to us, handed to us by Congress, by the President, and by the chain of command through the UCMJ, through the Manual for Courts Martial, and through orders. Those were available to the prosecutors in this case. They did not use them. Instead, they put consent at issue. And the lower court here cannot fix that now. Any questions? Nothing further, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. The case is now submitted. Court is in recess until 10:45.